Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hey there, welcome to Syosset Library. This is Jessica with Turn the Page podcast, and my co-host today is...
Hello, I'm Jen. I am the co-host today.
And we're really excited because we have two extra co-hosts from another library hanging out with us today. Why don't you introduce yourselves? Tell us about the library you are here from and about your podcast.
Well, thank you for having us. My name is Sam. I am a librarian at the Brentwood Public Library. And we, along with my co-host, DJ...
Hi, I'm DJ.
We do the Brentwood Stories podcast. So originally it started out as we got a grant and it was a local history strictly podcast, but we kind of expanded it over the last few months after DJ and I took over. And now we're just telling the stories of Brentwood as a whole. We're collaborating and we're so happy to be here.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I would... I would love to ask first just to start off, and I think maybe we could all talk about this in our own ways, but like, I'd be curious to know how we all sort of came to libraries and then to podcasting, and which came first, like, was it library to podcast or was it a different order perhaps? Like, what happened for you all?
Well, in terms of all of this, starting as a librarian, I started back when I was 16 as a page and then just worked my way up. I'm 30 now, so I've been in libraries for about half my life. And from there, I had worked with music recording with some friends and stuff like that, so I have a general idea of how to do sound mixing and that kind of stuff. And I just kind of naturally flowed into the podcasting environment with just technical know-how and conversational skills.
For me, the podcast came first. So, I had worked at a library. I was a page, like we all start as pages and then we get sucked in and never leave. But I was not anticipating being a librarian. I got my college degree in broadcasting. So I did TV and radio. So I've had done radio shows. I've had my own podcast before. And then I became a librarian thinking I was never going to use that ever again. And now I run the podcast with DJ. So it was kind of just like a natural transition for me. They were like, hey, you know how to do this. So do it. And here I am.
So for me, it was different. So first of all, it's funny because like Jen and I, we've kind of like touched base throughout our lives in different ways. But before I went into libraries, I wanted to be in film because I don't know what was wrong with me. But I was all about that. I thought that that would be very interesting. And then I interned in film and I was like, no. But I ended up going to libraries. And I took this really long way around. I was in children's. And then around 2018, something like that? We got a director who was really into podcasts. And this was around the time that library podcasts were really expanding and library pros were really big. That's another podcast from Long Island, a library, Long Island, Sachem. And my director, we went to a thing at the New York Library Association conference about podcasting in your library. And I just went to take notes because I knew that there was interest in the building for something like that. And then my director told my assistant director at the time to come down and talk to me in children's and see if I would be interested in doing this. And I was like, yeah, sure, of course. And then I was like, I have no idea how to do this. I don't know how this is going to work. So I called Chris from Sachem and I'm like, Chris, help me. And I found myself somehow back in another form of the entertainment industry on Turn the Page. And now we've been doing this for a while. So Jen, why don't you tap in here?
Yeah, so I am like the newest little baby to this, I think, of everybody. I only kind of like accidentally fell into libraries a year and a half ago. Before that, I had been like pretty set on my life path being like in academia. I got a PhD in medieval history. I wrote a dissertation about like the Crusades and gender and all this stuff. And then by the time of it, I was so burnt out. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this. And a job came up at Syosset Library just at the right time. And I took it and I sort of like accidentally fell into libraries and then accidentally fell into podcasting with Jessica. And yeah, like we have been friends for like over 20 years at this point, like sort of in and out of each other's lives at various points. And so like we had a good, I think, repartee pretty immediately because we already knew each other and we have similar tastes and stuff. And it's nice to sort of, yeah, like be doing this thing that was like not at all on my horizon that I love. So
and now I have to say we have pulled Jen so far into libraries that she is now going to library school.
Like literally, like when I finished my PhD in 2021, I was like, never again. I am like in recovery from school. I will never go back. And then like now I'm, you know, getting a library degree. So I'm like, oh no.
For the last time, no more school for you after this.
Yeah. Unless, no, that's it. I'm stopping after this.
Yes, you'll teach the classes. Podcasting in libraries.
I feel like that's what always happens. Like the second you start working in a library, you never leave.
Yes.
So, I mean, you're living proof, but do people call you doctor? Like, can I call you doctor?
You absolutely can. Thank you. And, you know, what's funny is that coming to libraries was the first place where I received mail to Dr. Jennifer Jordan. I was like, thank you. I feel so validated here. Like, I think just libraries are really just like a cool space, I think, especially like now when most of the working world feels so cutthroat and, you know, like this is just a nice kind of creative place to expand. And so
I have to say my favorite part of my job is that I get to do whatever I want.
But yeah,
I say that all the time. And all my friends who are like, don't work in libraries, they're like, what do you mean you like your job? And I'm like, no, I love it. There's a difference.
Yeah. I always say my job is whatever I feel like it is that day.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like and it's just fun to, you know, be in an environment that lets you sort of try out these new you know, maybe at once they were kind of experimental, now they're more mainstream, but just like new ways of engaging with your patrons and with the larger community. And so I'd love to know, like, have you yours is very locally based, as you talked about a little bit. And so do you find that there is like a sort of community in the community around it? Like, since you interview local people and talk to, like, you know, at least at the beginning more, like, and now you've expanded, but like, you really do work with the community in a way, a very direct way. And like, I'm wondering just like how that, you know, how that came about.
Yeah. So, I mean, we try to engage as much as we can with the community. It's not always easy to find topics that would be, I don't know, interesting in a broad sense. So we try to pick things that will get more wide appeal. Like we interviewed one of our alumni from around here, Gary Brown. He was with the Packers and he's a Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, he was in the NFL.
Yeah.
Impressive guy. And then who was it? So that's what, like, previously on the podcast, it was run by two of our other co-workers, and one of them was a local historian librarian. So like he knows Brentwood,
yeah,
like the back of his hand, where we kind of came in not really knowing anything. So the way we have tried to structure it was to kind of get people notoriety. So like Gary Brown, we interviewed this guy named Buddy McGirt. He was like a really big boxer back in like the 90s. And he came from Brentwood. So that was just kind of try to like the spark to get more people interested. And then from there, we're just trying to incorporate other aspects of the community.
Yeah.
So not necessarily just celebrities, but like we're interviewing like the museums that where we have museum passes to try to like entice the community to check them out.
As well as some more broader Long Island stuff as well that is going to have more wide appeal to even people in Brentwood or outside of Brentwood. But there's like a lot of things in Brentwood that have already been covered by the podcast that we would feel a little odd revisiting at the moment. We may revisit them in the future with different like local urban legends and things like that. But yeah, we try not to repeat ourselves too much with info.
And really just having fun with it. Like, yeah, we did a Long Island Legends episode, and that was like when I first started, and we told ghost stories, and that was my favorite thing that we've done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, so first of all, that is awesome. And, you know, I am a big fan of local legends and local ghost stories. You have, so like, I mean, don't give me, you don't have to tell me. So there are Brentwood specific ghost stories?
There are ghost stories and legends. So the biggest, okay, the biggest Brentwood ghost story that we kind of incorporated in that episode we did in October, which we're going to do different legends probably next October.
I think we're thinking about more.
We talked about the psychiatric hospital, which Edgewood, Brentwood, we talked about those. That was a huge one. And then we did some other Long Island ones. So we'll do like one Brentwood specific, but we do have like, there's the legend of the Red Owl.
Yeah, the Red Owl's the big one.
Yeah, we should, we need to, this is another thing we need to collab on. I'm just going to name drop King Zog's ruins here. And yes, that could be revisited at some point. I think that's the closest to Syosset of a legend, you know, like that we have an urban legend that we have. But that's really cool. I think like I asked, so, you know, Syosset, has some people of interest who have come through here. So we've, you know, one of the ways that we've sort of reached out beyond Syosset is kind of harnessing those people because, you know, we're a really weird area where like we have Natalie Portman and we have Judd Apatow and, you know, Adam Pascal, and we have had all of those people on Turn the Page. We have others too. We have not reached. Well, that's the thing. You know, it's like we have others that we either haven't gotten back, or you know, we haven't reached out to. Sue Bird is another big one.
Yeah.
And Sue Bird, I think, was she the first big person? Either her or Adam Pascal were the first big name that we had on the podcast. But you know what we did? What we did was there was just a lot of like, I like to call it throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks, you know, because like first we were doing some interviews with a lot of the lecturers that came in. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to email Sue Bird's agency and I'm going to see if she wants to talk to us. And like, I don't even think we'd had 100 episodes at that point. I think we were still every other week or less than that. And she got back to us and she's like, yeah, okay. So, you know, that just kind of started to snowball. And then we reached out to Judd Apatow and he loves freaking Syosset. So he was like, yeah. So we've actually had him on twice. And he told some of, Judd, if you're listening, I doubt you are, but if you are, we love the stories that you told twice. But we did it a different way. The first time we had him on, we just had him on and we talked about his time in Syosset, and his mentor is a man named Jack DeMassey, who was my, film and TV teacher at Syosset, because Syosset High School, it does not anymore, I don't think, but it used to have a TV studio in it. So they taught TV production classes, and Jack DeMassey was the person who did the radio station and the TV production classes. So I had him too. So the second time we had Judd Apatow on, it was supposed to be for like, I think our 200th episode. He was our 100th episode and our 200th. But it was a surprise because I've been in contact with Jack, and Jack was kind of in the background on Zoom, and I was texting him and he hopped on and surprised Judd. So we got like we got some similar stories, but we got Jack's perspective on them too. So we were able to mix it up that way.
Yeah, that's awesome. So for reaching out to a lot of these people, what would you say is like your process if you were going to reach out to someone big, like you said, with Natalie Portman?
So what I tell, what I've, and we've had other people who are not Syosset specific on, Jen can talk to them about them in a second, but what I've said, because I've said this to Jen too, when she's reached out to people, you want to be persistent. You want to be just annoying enough. And also, you know, kind and understanding and self-deprecating, but not too annoying. So, you know, if you get that thread back, it's like this big like dance of like, how long do I wait before I say, hey, you know, I start Columboing. Remember that time you said that you would, that Judd would be interested? Like, has his schedule cleared up yet? You know, it's like, again, it's like this dance of, at what point do I let go? At what point do I reach out again? And at what point am I annoying them? Or is it just enough annoying that they're just going to get back to me? Jen?
Yeah, I would second all of that. And I would also say that, like, when I'm reaching out to people who, you know, are a little bit bigger and perhaps busier, and I'm reaching them through, like, a representative rather than directly, I tend to kind of approach it like a cover letter to like a job interview. You know, I'm like, I am selling you on me as a host and on our show and showing you that I know your stuff, you know? And so I try to tailor the pitch to like what I know about them. And, you know, and like a little bit of that is like flattery. Yeah. Like, cause you're sort of showing them that you know them and that you care about their work and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm also trying to pitch me and show that, like, hey, look, I'm going to try to be a little funny here. And then maybe that will like prove to you that I'll be funny in the podcast, you know, and not weird, even though sometimes I am weird, you know, but like, so like there
in
is
the best way.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll put that on my resume, actually.
Weird in the best way. That should be the new tagline of Turn the Page, at least our episodes, because some of the hosts are a little bit, you know, different. But Jen and I, we do weird pretty well.
We do, yeah. We have a lot of normal hosts to counterbalance us, I think. But so
I think it makes people more comfortable when you're like, not so, this is an interview. Let us conduct the interview.
Absolutely. And like, you want to, for me, like my goal is to always like, rather than like, I want to find out about like this thing or that thing, I'm like, I want this person to be comfortable and to like have a good time, you know? And so that's like kind of what I use to drive my pitch too. I'm like, this will just be like fun, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's always good, is being persistent with trying to get people. I know I've been trying to reach out to Reggie Fils-Aimé for like over a year. Because he's a Brentwood alumni. But anytime I try to like reach out, there's always like those paywall type areas to try and get through. Because I know some agencies will require like a, what is your budget? And I'm like, how do you politely say zero?
That's very hard. That's very hard.
I can speak to that. You just say that you are a public library. I mean, because Sue Bird's had something similar, you know, and you just say that you're a public library. I mean, you know, they're not speaking for anything that's going to get you money. They're not, you know, there's just advertising. You're a public library and your area of interest is specifically this person's background in your community and how it shaped them as a person now and where they got. You know, and I think Adam Pascal's people might have had something similar, but you know, you just put all of your cards on the table in that situation in the email, and you hope that they get back to you. And two times they did, sometimes they didn't. It, like I said, it's just, you know, sometimes somebody will actually get back to you months later and you'll be like, okay, you know, but it's always worth asking, even if you say that your budget is zero. You're a public library. This is of interest to the people in your community. And it's of interest to the people who want to get to know the celebrity a little bit better.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't get that kind of conversation in, you know, on like, no offense, Conan, but Conan O'Brien or whatever. You know, it's a different type of conversation.
And sometimes the guests are so excited to talk to you. Like when I read, because I was the one who reached out to Buddy McGirt, like he, not only did he email me back in like 2 seconds, he called the library and we happened to be closed that day because like we had like a plumbing issue. So like I got him on my cell phone. He was like, let's do it. I'm in London. Like he was like, I love the library, and started telling me stories on the phone, like immediately, that we ended up talking about again when we finally sat him down for the podcast. So sometimes they like talking to us too.
It always feels good when they're enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, it was similar with Natalie Portman, because I interviewed her with my now assistant director, Sharon, and we were all in the building at the same time. Like we all were different grades, but went to school at the same time. But what I did was, and that was during the pandemic when she came out with her her children's book. And she was filming something in France. So like it, you know, we kept having to change when we were going to interview, but when it happened, you know, the Zoom link that I gave her, the password was one of a teacher that I knew was a favorite of hers. I had the same class with her, with this teacher. And it, like, as soon as she got on, it was like all the guards were down. And she's like, is he here? Is he going to be interviewing us too? And we're like, no, we're sorry. I didn't mean to, you know, present. And she's just like, oh my God, he was my favorite teacher ever. And that just kind of came up in conversation. So again, like you're not going to get those, like you've seen, you're not going to get those interviews on, you know, late night. It's very personal to the library.
Yeah.
Again, I see you. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree because, you know, in a lot of ways too, like I think it's probably refreshing for them because especially when you're that level of famous, like whenever you're talking to people, you have like talking points, you know, and like you have to talk about like this movie that you're in or like say these things about it to get people to come see it or like stick to the script that you are being like, you know, paid to promote this movie for. And so I think that like, you know, at first, sometimes they're like, oh, another speaking engagement. But when you get do those nice little personal touches like that, I think it does go a long way to sort of like get not only get their guard down, but to get them excited about like, oh, this isn't like another obligatory press appearance, you know?
I think that actually segues me into one of my points that I want to talk about. Because one of the things I covered in library school that I feel like a lot of people don't understand about libraries is that librarians are storytellers in some sense. So like for us to be able to do this on a podcast front, like people are excited to not be doing, like you said, like a press where I got an X, Y, and Z. Instead, they can talk about the story of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a lot more relaxed of an environment for them.
I agree. And, you know, I think that that's the way that we approach it when we interview authors too. You know, I know Jen and I, we really kind of like to get into just the heart of the author and the story that they're telling. And, you know, I know for me, I'll do interviews and I kind of try to let the guest drive the conversation because that's where you can figure out what they're excited about, what makes them tick, and probably what made the story so compelling that they had to write it.
Yeah. It's always easier to just let them run with what you can and then just put in whenever you need to segue to something else.
I think that's why I always throw away all my questions. Like I think I write them and then I throw them away because like, again, I went to school for broadcasting. So that was the biggest thing they drove home to us. Like you need the questions if they don't talk, but if they do talk, you need to get rid of all your questions and you need to listen.
Oh, I love that because I feel like I accidentally stumbled into that technique, you know, because like when I started interviewing, I would write out dozens and dozens of questions just so there would be like no dead air. And a lot of that came from, I think, being like an academic and a teacher of being like, I need so much content just to like, you know, but like the more comfortable I got podcasting, the more I started to approach it like almost like preparing as like a DM for like a Dungeons and Dragons game. It's like, okay, I'm going to prepare all this material and I will happily torch 95% of it in favor of like whatever happens to come up in the moment, you know?
I definitely like that analogy. I'm very on board with that.
Are you going to start throwing away questions? Is this a breakthrough? I'm so excited.
I mean, how often do I really like go question for question on them?
I'm not answering that question.
Fair.
And then I think too.
Yeah. No. You go ahead.
I was gonna say, I feel like people are worried about silence and dead air, but I feel like the most emotion that you will get out of the question is in the silence that follows.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that comes to, I think, like another interesting aspect of podcasting, which is like the editing process and post-production, and like how much intervention do you do? Like, do you let it sound organic and natural? And those pauses too, like, yeah, like they could sometimes on the surface feel like awkward, you know, because they do like in a classroom too, but it could be very generative. Like that silence is like where you see people reacting to things and processing them, or even just like doing the thinking, you know, and like that precedes speaking. So I kind of like that like approach to editing and to like presenting the material. Is that what you guys do too?
I mean, yeah, so this through silence and things like that, I go through the whole episode, right? And I get rid of the ums. I get rid of like when the lips smacking, I get rid of those and those weird sounds. But for the most part, unless someone says something wildly inappropriate, I leave it the way it is. Because I want people to get a sense of who the person is that we're interviewing.
See, that's funny because I used to get rid of every single, I do get rid of the lip smacking though, because I feel like that, you know, is a little, grating, you know, and it's not the fault of the person, you know, everybody has their idiosyncrasies. It's just like when you're listening to it, it just sort of takes you out of the conversation. But the funny thing was, I found myself spending hours and hours and hours, because we release a lot of episodes at this point. See, now I'm going to be very self-conscious about how did I say it, but we, you know, when we first started, it was one episode every other week. And then as soon as the publishing companies sort of caught wind of us, they started sending us all of these opportunities. You know, I think the first one was like Lisa Scottolini, and I was like, we are not going to say no to Lisa Scottolini. And then when that happened, the floodgates opened. So we started doing like, you know, different, like more than one episode. You know, we drop episodes on Thursdays, but each episode is kind of in its own little space. So I could spend, and Jen could spend, because we're, I think, the two major editors, and then we're training somebody else at the moment. We could spend our whole week just with And I had a friend of mine from high school who, I mean, I actually have two friends of mine from high school who've been multiple guests. One of them works in the entertainment industry writing children's music. And the other one is actually Kathy Kim, who is Ji-un on Sesame Street now. The first Korean Muppet on Sesame Street. That is my friend Kathy Kim, who I graduated with. But the three of us were friends, and I interviewed them. And one of them at the time was like, I say so much. Can you take out all the ums? So, you know, I'm doing it. And I said to him, you know, this doesn't sound like a normal conversation. And it wasn't that it sounded choppy. It just sounded robotic. And I said, but I killed myself getting rid of all of these ums. But if you want to listen to both versions and tell me what you think, you know, I'll certainly get rid of some of the really awkward ones. And he listened to both, and he was like, you know, you're right. I don't sound like a person without all of these idiosyncrasies. So it depends. I think I've gotten a little bit lighter on but sometimes if like a silence like lasts like 4 seconds, I might cut it down to 2.5 seconds. Just because that still conveys the emotion, but people might not think that we have, I don't know, broken down or that they've lost the thread.
I mean, yeah, there's definitely sometimes you just need to leave certain things. I feel like people say, you know, a lot too, that I'm always like, all right, I'm going to take out the ums, but I'll keep in some of the, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I used to joke that like if I was going to write a book about this, it would be like the audacity of and stop saying, you know.
Yeah.
My personal favorite is does that make sense? You know, which I just like, I'm trying to stop saying that so much because it's an insecure thing, you know, in addition to being a tick, it's like, but I don't know, it's very, very hard to get rid of some of those things. And I think I tend to approach it like in a similar way that I think you're all talking about, which is that like, I remove those things when they are very intrusive, but if removing it is more intrusive, then I kind of let it lay.
Mm-hmm. I know we had interviewed a friend of mine who's a photographer, and during his interview, I think he used the phrase little by little, or what was it?
It was something like that. It was like a phrase, but not even like a common phrase. It wasn't like, you know, or it was just the same phrase that he repeated like 6 times. And I was like, oh, we need new material.
And that could be tricky because, you know, like, I just said all of them at once. when you're talking to a person in person, you have all this other information like their face and their expressions and their movements that distract you from those repetitive things, you know, but when it's only voices, those things can tend to like stick out a little bit more. So those things, just like listening, a listening experience is different from a more immersive experience of all of your senses. And so that's at play too, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think sometimes, like you commented on our microphones, so they look like we're recording something. And I think that's one of the things that trips up people sometimes too. I think they feel pressure to sound like, oh, very professional. And I think Zoom has been our greatest tool, because if people Zoom with us, they feel a little less like, oh my God, I have to sound perfect.
And we've definitely learned to take every single object away from me while recording.
Do you tend to like fidget? Are you a fidget?
I fidget. I tap my toes. I just get stuff caught on different things and I'll start like clicking. Like I had to put my pen away because I'm like, I know I'm just going to click this like 100 times during this interview.
Oh, and poor DJ, I am such a perfectionist. Like he'll start clicking things and I'm just giving him like the dirtiest look, like, stop it. We're recording. Please stop.
I just want to know, so how do you edit? What is your editing process? I know we talked about the removing of the ums. What platform do you use? Do you have a specific day that's your editing day? How does that work?
So it's pretty loose. So I do all the editing just because I had gotten the degree literally in editing. And I was trained with Adobe Audition. So that's what I use primarily. I know a lot of people use Audacity or other things like that, but they taught me Adobe. I'm sticking with it. And that's what they use in like the TV and the broadcasting and all that. So it just made sense for me to keep doing it. But as far as an editing schedule, I'm pretty chillax about it. As long as it's done before I have to post it. So we only post once a month. So it is the third Wednesday of the month. So as long as I'm done by Tuesday, we are good to go.
Yep. And hopefully I have enough time to give it a listen over and catch anything that she may have missed.
Yeah. Do you guys ever have the issue where if I put the audio file as an MP3, you get random clicks, but I keep it as like that big wave form and we're Gucci.
No, not really. I mean, there are times though where something will kind of, so here's an interesting thing that we actually added. Where do you host your podcast? Cause this kind of comes up. Do you host it on like Blueberry or a podcatcher, or do you host it on just, cause I know there was a podcast and there might still be one at Brentwood that's on YouTube.
Yeah, so we are the Blurberry, and then it posts to Spotify. I think it does all of it, Spotify, Apple Music, all that. And then it'll go to our website too. And the teens do, like you said, that's the Average Brentwood Teens. That is all team run, actually, which is pretty impressive. And then just the librarian edits it, but the kids run the whole thing. And they do that on YouTube. And I think it's because they're very interesting. There's like 10 of them. Like they need more than audio, so you know who's talking.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is the YouTube aspect. We spoke to somebody who was a podcaster, and they told my assistant director, because at the time she was the one doing the interview, that YouTube is a really good place to get hits for podcasts. So she had suggested it to me. And Blueberry, there are some hosting sites that will automatically put your podcast on YouTube. Blueberry wasn't one of them. So what we do is somebody else in our department, and this kind of fits into what we were talking about before, Melissa, who's just started learning to edit, and she's also started doing some hosting with us. She puts every episode up on YouTube. We have like this background that she puts up, she makes on Canva, puts the audio to it, puts it on YouTube, but she listens to them. And sometimes she will go back and she'll catch mistakes, or she'll catch like if somebody got cut off early or something, and then she'll kind of come back and then I'll fix it post production. So that's kind of a more recent thing. that we have started, and we get a lot of hits on YouTube too. So that has been pretty cool.
Hmm.
Yeah, I did not really realize the power of YouTube until like I started dating, and like every boyfriend I had was like, I love YouTube. And I'm like, I never watch YouTube. I didn't know that many people used YouTube.
I mean, back in the day, YouTube was how I rewatched every episode of Daria, because it was up on YouTube with the original music. Now I have it's not up there anymore, I don't think. It might be. But now I have the DVDs, which does not have the original music, which annoys me. YouTube was like, for a while, like that's where you had access to pretty much everything. And you do still, but it's a whole other beast than it was when it came out.
So have you guys thought about, because I know that's very popular too, where you will record your interview, but like make the whole thing a video as well, not just like a background, like making it, because we're thinking about it.
Yeah.
And we're playing around with the idea.
We did something very recently. Jen, would you like to talk about the Barnes & Noble event?
Yeah, sure. So just a week or 2 weeks ago, perhaps, we had a live podcast episode pretty much from Barnes & Noble in Bayshore. It was a book party slash reading for Robert Atone, who just released a really cool new...
We know him.
Oh, very cool. Oh, friend of the community, friend of libraries.
Friend of all the communities. Robert is the best.
We'll have to put him in our episode description so he knows that we talked about him.
Yeah. No, we have him. He holds his true crime classes here.
Cool. Very cool.
Same. We do it virtually.
Yeah.
So we had him and he was interviewed by another super rad horror author, Clay McLeod Chapman. And we were there to ask some questions and we fielded some questions from the audience. And it was a super duper really fun new way to expand the show. I would say we kind of did something a little similar for Will Wheaton.
The cool thing about that was we recorded that on a device called a Meeting Owl, which is sort of one of those devices that came out post-pandemic for hybrid events or hybrid conferences. We took it to Barnes and Noble, and you know, so all of that is up on our YouTube page. There are times where we do use video. We do live like author visits sometimes, and we will, if the author's okay with it, even though that's not technically the podcast, it's podcast-y, you know, we'll release that on our YouTube page. To be honest with you, I don't know. I don't love being on camera personally, even though like I find myself on it a lot, you know, with TikTok or other things here. I would have to be in the right mindset for it, and it would have to be infrequently. So I would have to be like, okay, I'm not going to do this with messy hair or on like 2 hours of sleep. This is something I really need to prepare for.
Yeah. I mean, we only started playing around with the idea recently because we have a pretty big TikTok, and the librarian that runs that, his name is Tevin, and he has blown up lately, like not just on our TikTok, but like he's been interviewed by a bunch of like major media outlets lately. So we're like, oh, we need to get Tevin on the podcast. But I'm like, he does video all the time. We should make the podcast a video, at least for his episode. And it'd be nice because like you see him as a face of TikTok, you don't get really to talk to him. So it would kind of be a different form of getting to know Tevin, a day in the life of Tevin, but you know, a real conversation, not a 10-second TikTok.
That sounds super cool. And it would be a really nice way to be able to also like incorporate the work he does into the show itself, you know, because you couldn't like share a TikTok in an audio only podcast, you know, so that's very cool. Yeah, I do like the idea of like special episodes as videos, because I think that would be kind of exhausting to do all the time, but it would be really fun to do like with prep, you know, and like the right circumstances.
Definitely agree with that. I agree entirely with the 2 hours of sleep thing. Like you want to make sure that you are on your best when you're on camera.
More than 2 hours of sleep, at least 2.45.
Yeah.
it's definitely harder. Like when I did news packages in college, like those are like 2 minutes tops, and the pressure you have to turn that around. So imagine like a 30 minute episode where you have to like do that whole thing. I'm like, oh, that's so much pressure.
And video editing is a lot more difficult than audio editing. You know, yeah. You can look at an audio file and you can see places where you can seamlessly put something together where you don't realize, like, I had no idea that this thing was cut. You know, like, hey, I didn't know that, you know, like you wouldn't know that there was, I don't know, 30 seconds of somebody fumbling with their dog outside or whatever, you know, like it's just, or someone lost connection. It's just not something that you hear. But when you're doing video editing, it is so much more difficult and it is so much more time consuming. You know, and I just, I don't know. It would have to be something that was planned. And it would also have to be something that if it went haywire, we'd be cool letting it go. Be like, all right, yep, that person was attacked by chickens in the middle of the episode and there's just no getting around it, you know?
Yeah, you cannot hide in video, like at all. and that's why I think when I went to college, I specialized in audio just because it was easier. Like I can see a lip smack from a mile away. I know when it's coming and I can just.
That little sharp point.
Yeah. Right?
I think I did an interview. God, it was years ago at this point. And it was a wonderful interview, but the guest had a terrible cold. And I got very accustomed while I was editing it to see exactly what the curve of her sniffle was. So like I almost didn't even, like I listened because I had to and I listened at the end, but I probably could have gone through that whole thing and just taken out every sniffle just because I could tell. I'm like, yep, there it is on the rise and on the fall, there it is.
The noise reduction process in Adobe Audition is my best friend. Like someone has if someone breathes really heavily, like you could just copy that noise print. You do the noise reduction process and I'm like, oh, I have crisp, clean audio now. It's amazing.
I feel like I want to try that. That sounds super cool.
Oh, and it's so easy. I'll show you how to do it.
So yeah, I mean, I'm good. Anybody else?
No, I think we're okay. I think we're good. I like to throw my questions away. So I think we had a good conversation.
I'm learning to throw them away.
We need to talk ghosts though. Like this needs
to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I was real excited with our ghost podcast. I used an AI voice generator and did a Vincent Price for it.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
That's
yeah. Did you do the little bridge though from Thriller? Vincent Price? Oh no, wait. Well, Jen, who was that?
That was Vincent
Price. It is.
Little
across the land, the midnight hour.
No, it was kind of I just put the different ghost stories we had into it's called Uber Duck AI, and we were very like in the beginning of the episode we're like, this is a voice generated by an AI to sound like Vincent Price. It is not in any way him, and we just had him narrate stories.
All right, we are going to close this chapter, turn the page, and it was great talking to you. This was Jessica from Syosset Library, my co-host
Jen. Goodbye, nice talking to you all.
And who were you all again? What was I bringing from?
Well, thank you for being on Brentwood Stories. We really appreciate you guys coming and talking to us.
You all should listen to Brentwood Stories. You got some good stories. And you have Vincent Price, for real.
Yeah.
The real Vincent Price.
Bring him back from the dead.
Yes. At Brentwood Stories, they bring Vincent Price back from the dead. Real necromancers at Brentwood Stories.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you all so much. This was super, super fun. Yes,
thank you guys.
Thank you for talking to us and doing the collab.
Yeah, we have been DJ and Sam.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.